Good morning. You can sit. Well, as Pastor said, I'm plugging along here with my teaching on Genesis. And depending on how far we get today, I got to be honest with you, this morning's teaching is going to be mainly scientific. And you all know I'm not a science person. Okay, I'm an English person. So I had to study this stuff out before I could even talk about it. But I think it's kind of clear enough. I prayed this morning it would be clear enough everybody would get it. The fact is that the things I'm going to talk about, I've already talked about a few, are so incredibly clear in pointing out that evolution isn't even possible that you can't jump over them. Any teaching on creation obviously has to first get rid of this whole idea of evolution that the rest of the world is saying is the way it is. So these are your arguments, if you ever need to use them. And you never know when somebody's going to come to you and say something. You can come back at them not just with, well, I just believe it's creation. Because, you know, let's face it, you know how people are. Well, that's what you believe and this is what I believe, so we'll agree to disagree, exactly. Hit them with some facts, okay? So we've already talked about some of the things that disprove evolution. The simple fact of the cell, the human cell, and the parts, and how everything has to work in connection and be in the correct order. And I talked about how if you throw blocks out onto the floor, if you throw a certain number of blocks out onto the floor, the chances of them coming out in order are pretty slim. Okay, now just start adding more blocks to that. Yeah. Instead of three, add four, add five, add six, like chromosomes. Start tossing them out. How often do you think they're going to land in order? Okay, which they're trying to tell us that this happened. So let's talk about a few other things. Of course, the evolutionists believe that our Earth is billions of years old. And that's kind of part of their whole belief, because they believe if you have enough time and enough opportunity, anything can happen. So we're going to talk about a few of the other things. For example, okay, we all know that there's erosion. Am I right? Yep. I mean, there's erosion. Yep. But erosion doesn't happen as quickly as you might think. Okay? Geologists have confirmed that erosion causes a mountain to lose a foot of height. You ready for this? Every 5 to 10,000 years. Now, that's 5 to 10,000 years. So, if we use their calculation, in 25 million years, okay, the mountains would lose a mile. But, of course, the evolutionists are saying that the Earth is billions of years old. If that were true, using this calculation, do you realize that the Rocky Mountains would have been flat 10 million years ago? They'd be gone. There would be no Rocky Mountains. Now, here we go. The Mississippi River Delta, okay? The mouth of the Mississippi River extends out into the Gulf of Mexico, 262 feet more each year. Now, if you divide the total distance back to the original shoreline, it's saying that the delta is about 4,400 years old. Okay? Now, at that same rate of 262 feet per year, the entire Gulf would have been filled in by soil 10,400,000 years ago. Which means that if you go somewhere down there on the Gulf, it's not really there. You think it's there. It's all filled in with dirt, according to evolution. Okay, Earth's magnet. We all know there's a magnetic force in the Earth. Now, scientists have been observing the magnetic field for 135 or more years. And this is what they've determined. Okay, once again, we're out of my wheelhouse here. We're talking science, and, you know, that just wasn't my thing. But basically, what they say is that the half-life of the magnetic force is about 1,400 years. Now, what that means is this. The Earth's magnetic field strengthens. And since that's the half-life, it would be twice as strong as it was in 1,400 years. You got that? Mm-hmm. Now, think about it. If it's twice as strong as it was in the beginning in 1,400 years, then that means it was four times as strong as it was in the beginning in 2,800 years, 32 times as strong in 7,000 years, and 10,000 years ago, the magnetic field would have been so strong that any object that had any kind of magnetic capabilities, you know, would have been stuck to the Earth's surface and impossible to move because the magnetic force would have been so strong. Now, we're talking about 10,000 years ago. They're trying to tell you the Earth is billions of years old. Imagine the magnetic force of the Earth, if that were true. Helium. We all know helium. Helium balloons, right? Okay. Now, this part I didn't know until I studied it. When uranium turns into lead, which, by the way, I didn't even know was possible, okay? But when uranium turns into lead, it happens because of radioactive decay, and it gives off helium. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Now, here's the thing. By knowing the amount of lead in the Earth's crust, that gives an idea of how much helium is in the atmosphere. Because when uranium turns into lead, the radioactive decay gives off helium. The fact is, there's not enough helium in the atmosphere to account for the lead in the Earth's crust. Okay? So, even if we assume that in the very beginning of the Earth there was a helium-free atmosphere, like zero, imagine what today's content would have to be. Yeah. But the fact is, the content of helium in the Earth's atmosphere only suggests that the Earth is about 175,000 years old. Then, of course, we have population. Evolutionists are going to tell you that man has been walking the face of the Earth for a million years. A million years. Okay? So let's look at this. In 1970, now that we're going back, the last estimate was that there was about 3.5 billion people on the Earth. By 1976, it was 4 billion people, over 4 billion people. So let's go backwards. That means that in the year 1650, there would have only been about a seventh of that, about 500 million people. In the year 1000, there would have been about 275 million people. At the time of Christ, there would have been about 133 million. And in the year 2000 BC, there would have been about 110 million. Now, if the earth is as old as evolutionists say, and man has existed that long, he's actually been walking around for a million years, do you realize that the earth would have been wall-to-wall people, okay, 2 million years ago? 2 million years ago. That's based on facts of how many people lived in these different periods of time. Okay? And the fact is, if their figures would be right, the death rate would be about 110 people per year for all of civilization. Again, we're talking about stuff that doesn't even exist. Now, we're going to talk about recorded history. The earliest examples of recorded history are found about 3000 BC, 3000 years before Christ. Now, here, listen, think about it for a minute, guys. Most creationists believe about the flood, the great flood. And they believe the date of the flood was about 3,500 to 4,000 BC. Okay? It's a lot easier to believe that it took man, somewhere between 500 to 1,000 years to say, you know what, we need to really start writing this stuff down and recording it, than to believe that man was walking around on the earth for somewhere between 1 and 2 million years without keeping any record. Mm-hmm. Come on, guys, people keep records. Yeah. That's what they do. The most primitive civilizations keep records. Yeah. They might be verbal, but they pass them down from generation to generation. Mankind does that. They keep a record of what's going on. If the earliest recorded history is 3,000 years ago, that means there would have been people walking around on this earth for like 2 million years, never keeping track of anything. Right. This is one of my favorites. Carbon 14. Okay, carbon 14 is something that they use to measure the age of something that was formerly living, like it was alive at some point. So that includes a lot of things. I mean, wood. Wood was alive, was a tree, okay? Or bones, things like that. Now, carbon 14 is created, it's produced when nitrogen is activated by cosmic rays. When cosmic rays connect with the nitrogen, you get carbon 14. Now, here's how they do this. If something dies, the amount of carbon 14 in it would only be half in 5,750 years. So if something died and you checked it for the amount of carbon 14, in 5,750 years, there would only be half that much carbon-14 left in that thing. Okay? So let's say you measured the carbon-14 in a man, and you got 1,000 counts. Okay. In 5,750 years, you'd only get 500 counts. In 11,500 years, you'd only come up with 250 counts. In 23,000 years, you'd only get 62.5 counts. In 46,000 years, you'd get less than 3 counts. So anything over 50,000 years couldn't even be datable. You couldn't possibly date it. And yet they're telling us that the Earth is 2.5 that they can find. 2.5 million year old bones. And 225 million year old dinosaur bones. Now, I just said, anything over 50,000 years, you can't even date it. But they're going to tell you this. Now, here's the thing. Remember something. The whole idea of carbon 14 is based on the fact that we're assuming that the atmosphere has always contained the same amount of carbon 14. So anything alive has 1,000 counts, and then you can count back from there. All right, but what if that's not the same? What if when something died, when they dated it, it appears older than it actually is? Now, how could that possibly happen? Well, let's see. What do you need to get carbon 14? You have to get cosmic rays to affect the nitrogen. Before the flood, there was a canopy around the entire Earth. You know what that canopy means? No cosmic rays. No cosmic rays. Anything from before the flood, if you use the carbon 14 method, it's going to appear older than what it is, because there weren't any. And you know, evolutionists, people who believe that way, they're going to use anything they can to explain or prove their point of view. Well, that's kind of that way with everything, isn't it? They use the geological column. You know, that's the Earth. All right, and they talk about the first level of the Earth and the second level of the Earth and all that stuff. And when they dig down through, they look for fossils, okay? And they believe that the oldest fossils are in the bottom layer. And, of course, the youngest fossils are in the top layer. So when they find something, they assign the age to it by the layer it was found in. They just go by that. When they come up with a problem, like they find something at what they call the 2 billion year level, but that thing didn't even exist until later, they go, oh, that's called faulting. One layer of the Earth folds in upon another layer. And that's why. Because they have to come up with some explanation for why they found a fossil for something in a layer they say is 2 billion years old and the thing didn't even exist. Now, the thing is, what this geological column does show is this. The things in the lowest layer are the most simple animals. And the more complex animals are in the upper layers. So let's think for a minute about a flood. What would be buried first? The simplest animals. The more mobile animals would have survived longer until there was heavier sediment. And man would survive until he drowned. Okay? This explains why you've got the more advanced fossils in the upper layers than the lower layers. Not because man evolved from some little whatever, and then eventually you get man, that's why you've got these fossils up here. No! It's because these little guys would have drowned first. And then the more mobile animals, and then finally man. Now, as I said, evolutionists are going to tell you that given enough time, anything is possible. And they say you can't disprove evolution because no one will live long enough to be able to disprove it, right? You won't be able to see it to see if it's not correct because you won't live that long. Well, there is a scientific law, and we all know about scientific laws, like gravity and stuff like that. You can't get away from them. They're there. This is called the second law of thermodynamics. And what the second law of thermodynamics says is this: anything left to itself is going to go from a complex state to eventually a more simple state. Now, mind you, this is totally the opposite of what evolutionists say, because they say you go from the more simple state to the more complex state. Here's a real simple example. Get a car and stick it out somewhere and just leave it alone. Don't touch it. Don't do anything with it. Given enough time, that car is going to become rust. A big pile of rust is a much more simple state than a car. I have never seen anything that, left alone and given enough time, improved.
That's right.
It doesn't happen.
That's right.
It doesn't. So the second law of thermodynamics kind of blows that idea out of the water. All right, we're going to talk about the flood. Now, scientists, creation scientists believe, they kind of are divided on that. I don't know why these people have to argue over things. But they say there was a local flood, and others say there was a worldwide flood. In other words, the ones that believe in a local flood believe that there was only a flood in the area where Noah lived. Okay, that area flooded. But the rest of the earth didn't. And of course, the other people believe that there was a worldwide flood, that the whole earth was flooded. Those who believe in a local flood say that man at that time was confined to the Mesopotamian Valley. And since man, basically, humanity, was in the Mesopotamian Valley, if you flooded that valley alone, basically it would be a worldwide flood because everybody lived there, so you're basically taking care of everybody. But in all likelihood, if you look at population and how population grows, the population at the time of Noah would have been too great for them all to be confined into the Mesopotamian Valley. They wouldn't have been able to fit. So, I mean, this was 1,600 years after creation, roughly. Man would, just, you know, look at simple population growth. He wouldn't have been able to fit there any longer. So a local flood would not have destroyed all living things. Think about it. Adam and Eve. Let's say they lived about 900 years ago. They were able to generate a lot of offspring. Okay? Now, if you take those offspring and you pair them off, okay, think about the potential for each pair. How many children would come about from each pairing? And then, we just keep going from there. You just keep pairing them off and thinking about how many children. In about 40 years, you could have 800. Which means that in about 200 years, you'd have 6.4 million people. Okay? So we know that the population could not have been confined in the Mesopotamian Valley. It just wouldn't hold it. And also, if it wasn't a worldwide flood, why would you need an ark? God wouldn't have told Noah to build an ark. He would have said, get out of there.
That's right. Just move.
Right? I mean, why go to all the trouble of building the ark if it's only in one area? All you have to do is leave. And as I mentioned the canopy. We've talked about it before. At this time, we truly believe that God had a canopy over the earth in the atmosphere. Kind of like, imagine a greenhouse effect. There was no rain. There was no snow. Water came up from the ground to keep the plants alive. And it was a perfect temperature all over the earth, kind of subtropical. People were healthy. Everyone. You know why? There were no problems with germs or bacteria or any other things that cause the sicknesses that we have. So along comes Noah, and he's a man of God at a time when people weren't. And God says, Noah, I need you to build an ark. And Noah obeys. Imagine Noah. Here's this guy building this ark. Huge. Don't imagine him like Gibbs building a canoe or a little boat in the basement. We're talking about a huge boat. Do you think anybody at that time had ever even seen a boat? Of course not. Okay? So he's building this boat. And people are saying, why are you building this boat? Because God told me that there's going to be a big flood. What's a flood? Well, a flood is water. And it's when the water, it rains. Well, what's rain? Well, it's water that's going to come out of the sky. And it's going to keep coming out of the sky until it gets so deep that it comes up and covers everything. Now, you've never seen rain in your life. I'm sure most people just laughed at him. I'll be honest with you. I don't even know what his wife said. You know? His wife may have said, yeah, okay. Let him go. You know, she went along with it, but we don't know that she hopped on board here, you know, 100%, like, yeah, baby, you build that ark. And here's something. Do you realize the animals came to Noah? He was supposed to bring two of every animal. How long would it take you to go out and gather that up? Yeah, a male and female. How long would it take you to gather that up? My gosh. You'd be traveling everywhere, wouldn't you? And then you'd be bringing them back and have to go back out, because how many animals can you bring back at one time, right? The animals came to him. You don't think God did that? Now, we know, because the Bible tells us, that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Look at Genesis 7, just so you know where the water came from. We're going to look at verses 11 and 12. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. That means there was water coming from above and below. So it rains for 40 days and 40 nights. Now Noah and his wife and his kids and their spouses are on this ark, and they survive. We know they were aboard the ark for 370 days. That's how long it took for the water to recede. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of water. Okay? And we all know the story of Noah sending out the dove. And that's how he knew when the waters were finally receding, because eventually a dove came back with an olive leaf, like a little branch in his mouth. He wouldn't be able to get that until the tops of the trees were visible. Okay. The ark itself came to rest on Mount Ararat. And again, how else would an ark end up 17,000 feet above sea level? Okay. So that gives you an idea of how deep the flood was. That when the ark finally came to rest, it was 17,000 feet in the air. And he was given directions by God on what to bring on this ark with him. God told him, take 7 of the clean animals and 2 of the unclean. You know why he needed more of the clean animals? For sacrifice. Okay. Let's look at Genesis 8, verse 22. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. Now, the fact is, God's telling Noah this. What this tells us is that before the flood, there were no seasons. There was no seed time and harvest. There was no summer and winter and cold and heat. The canopy, remember? The canopy kept it all a perfect temperature all the time. So it wasn't until after the flood that these things even existed. Cold and hot. Since they, and of course at that point it's just Noah and his family, mankind had never encountered seasons before, suddenly now they've got to learn some things, like how to provide heat and shelter. Right. Here's another thing. The animals, did you ever wonder why these animals came to Noah? Of course we know that was God, and just got on this ark and they're stuck on this ark with them for 370 days. None of these animals attacked them. Because when the canopy was there, the animals were all vegetarian. Yeah. And people were vegetarian. Since man had never killed animals to eat, animals were not afraid of man. Why would they be? But now suddenly everything's changed. Once that ark landed and they disembarked, things were different. There were seasons. Animals had to fear man because now man is a threat to their existence. And you have to kind of wonder, like Noah and his family, this is like one of those really old horror movies that used to be on TV when we were kids. You know? Like, you're the only people left on earth. You know? How would you feel? Well, in this case, it was true. Yeah. It's the only people left on earth. Now, before we take a closer look at the floodwaters and the ark and what happened and where the water went and all that other good stuff, I thought this might be a really good time to talk about dinosaurs. We all know dinosaurs are a topic of great interest. You know, kids love dinosaurs. And we're not saying, creationists don't say there were never any dinosaurs. They're not saying that. They're not saying all that stuff. You know, if you see those dinosaur bones in the museums, that's all phony. That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is that those dinosaurs weren't as old as they're trying to tell you. They didn't exist as long ago as they're trying to tell you that they existed. Dinosaurs are actually mentioned in the Bible. Okay? One of them is the behemoth and the tannin. The word behemoth means gigantic beast. The word tannin means dragon. So apparently there were animals that looked like what we would call a dragon. And apparently there were animals that were gigantic. Okay. Let's look in the book of Job for a moment. Just go to chapter 40. Now, the book of Job is one of the oldest books in the Bible. Okay? It was probably written about 2,000 years B.C. And if you look in verses 15 to 19, right in there, you're going to see something. Job, and we know the Bible is inspired by God, okay, describes a great king of land animals, a giant plant eater with great muscles and strong bones. One of the dinosaurs, it's called a Diplodocus, actually had legs that were so strong it could carry three others on its back. Okay? So Job's talking about a giant animal, most probably we would say a dinosaur. Now, some people try to say that this animal that Job's talking about was probably like an elephant or a hippopotamus. But Job says that their tails were as thick as cedar trees. I've never seen an animal, an elephant or a hippopotamus, with a tail as thick as a tree. Never. Now, what happened to the dinosaurs? Where are they? Why did they become extinct? And of course, again, you've got the liberal science that says the Earth was hit by this 6-mile-wide meteorite. And this meteorite, when it hit the Earth, it created so much dust that it blocked out the sun's light for months or even years, and all of the vegetation died out. And all of the dinosaurs that would eat the vegetation obviously starved to death. But there's a problem with that. No one has ever found a crater anywhere in the Earth that's that big. So what happened to that? Also, if that's true, why did other animals, like birds and insects and other mammals, survive? They couldn't eat the vegetation either. So what did happen to them? Well, when they find these dinosaur bones, there's one thing that they do notice. It seems as though these animals died and were buried in a very short period of time. They didn't die off periodically. Okay, you know we still have animals that have gone extinct, or some that are even close to being extinct now. It doesn't happen during a short period of time, though. It takes years and years and years for an animal to die out and for them to say, well, it's extinct now, there aren't any more. Certainly it doesn't happen in a short period of time. There is one explanation for how those dinosaurs could have been buried that quickly. It's called a flood. Okay? And it also explains, flood burial explains the fossilization. Animals and plants fossilize only if they're buried quickly and deeply. And here's why. If it's not deep, predators, decay, and weather can destroy them before they can fossilize. So the only way they can fossilize, plants or animals, is if it happens quickly and it's very, very deep. Now, how long does it take for something to fossilize? Evolutionists will tell you millions of years. It takes millions of years to make a fossil. But here's what scientists have discovered. If you have three main ingredients, a quick burial, water in the right amount, and the right minerals, fossilization can take place fairly quickly. And they've proven it. They've taken chicken bones and wood. And they've applied these three things, and these things have fossilized anywhere between 5 and 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, dinosaur bones are obviously a lot bigger, so they would more likely take much longer than 5 to 10 years, maybe hundreds of years, not millions. And I don't know if you're aware of this, because I wasn't. I'm not an archaeologist. But they have found dinosaur bones that are not completely fossilized. And they found plants that are not completely fossilized, partially fossilized. If all of this was from millions and millions of years ago, this wouldn't happen. There'd be no way. Now, here's the crazy thing. Did Noah have dinosaurs on the ark? Did you ever think about that? Well, God told him to take two of every creature. And if there were dinosaurs before the flood, he would have to, wouldn't he? Okay. Now, these are breathing land animals that he was supposed to bring with him. So that would have included dinosaurs. And we have had evidence that there were some dinosaurs that lived after the flood. So what happened to them? Well, after the flood, the world was a different place. After the flood, the huge tropical forests disappeared. There wasn't enough food for those dinosaurs. And please don't think that dinosaurs are the only animals that died off after the flood. Many animals become extinct. They've become extinct over the years. 400 species of animals have become extinct in the last 350 years. It's a lot of animals. No, the fact is that in almost every county, ancient legends talk about large reptilic creatures. That's the truth. Most scientists agree that the legends are almost always based on fact. How many of you have heard of the Loch Ness Monster? Now, I know we all write that off and we say, well, that's just, you know, a legend. But is it? They went into the jungles of Africa to the natives, and they brought with them pictures. And then the natives told them about this flying creature, this big bird that flew, huge. And they described it. So they showed them a bunch of pictures, and in every case, the natives pointed to a pterodactyl. They can't all be wrong. Okay? In the year 1977, a Japanese fishing ship discovered something. They took some tissue samples, and they said it was probably from a plesiosaurus. And that's what they found when they did the tissue samples. A Navy ship, the USS Stein, was on its way to track subs near South America. And their sonar stopped. So when they went back to dock, they had to get the sonar repaired in Long Beach, California. Only this was a weird thing. When they went down and examined the sonar, okay, there was a protective rubber covering on it. It was torn. It was battered. It had dozens of gouges in it, but here's the really weird thing. There were hundreds of sharp, hollow teeth broken off in the covering. And some of those teeth were longer than an inch. What did that come from? In the book of Job, we read about the Leviathan. And the Leviathan's actually mentioned in Psalm 104. Did you know that? Which means the Leviathan was around when King David was around. One interesting story takes place during World War I. In the year 1915. And I want to actually read it to you. The captain's name is Von Forstner. Okay? This is really something. On July 30th, 1915, our U-28 torpedoed the British steamer Iberian carrying a rich cargo in the North Atlantic. The steamer sank quickly, the bow sticking almost vertically in the air. When it had gone for about 25 seconds, there was a violent explosion. A little later, pieces of wreckage, and among them, a giant sea animal, writhing and struggling wildly, was shot out of the water to a height of 60 to 100 feet. At that moment, I had with me in the tower my officers of the watch, the chief engineer, the navigator, and the helmsman. Simultaneously, we all drew one another's attention to this wonder of the seas, but we were unable to identify it. We did not take a photograph because there was not enough time. The animal sank out of sight after 10 or 15 seconds. We all agreed it was about 60 feet long. Reminded us of a crocodile in shape and had four limbs with powerful webbed feet and a long tail tapering to a point. Now, this is during World War I that this happened. So, were there dinosaurs? Yes, I believe there absolutely, most definitely were. Now, we're going to look more closely at the flood and what happened to the earth because of the flood in the next teaching. We're going to talk about polar ice caps and what happened there. We're going to go specifically to Psalm 104 and look at some descriptions there about mountains and valleys and what took place, and canyons. And we're going to talk about the ice age that you read about.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to stop there.